Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and go to the Libyan border with Tunisia to speak with a human rights monitor who has been inside the worst battlefronts in Libya, in Misrata and in the Western Mountains. Sydney Quirum, who is a consultant with Human Rights Watch, joins us to describe the human rights situation in Libya, which was the basis upon which the United States and NATO intervened with air power. Then we'll look further into the situation in Libya and examine the stalemate with a former Libyan diplomat who was a translator for Muammar Gaddafi, Dr. Aboubakar Saad. We'll also try to assess the strength of the resistance inside Tripoli that indicates how much the noose is tightening on Gaddafi. Then we'll look into the state of dysfunction here in California and examine the latest budget with the former Deputy Treasurer of the State of California, Mark Paul, who will assess the good, the bad, and the ugly aspects of Governor Brown's budget to see how much of it is California dreaming in terms of revenue projections. And I'm joined by Sydney Quirum, who is a consultant with Human Rights Watch and has been involved with human rights work and political analysis in conflict zones for 10 years in Kosovo, Iraq, Mozambique, Pakistan, and Libya. Prior to that, she worked on Pakistan for the State Department, including in Peshawar on the border with Afghanistan. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sydney Quirum.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And you're in Tunisia now, right next door to Libya, where you've been. You've been in Misrata, which is pretty much ground zero, isn't it? That's the real front in this war. The contentious battle over this city has gone back and forth. And you've also been in the Western Mountains, which there's also quite a lot of warfare going on there, as well as a refugee crisis. Am I correct?
Yeah, there are a lot of front lines in this war. There's one in Misrata, close to Zlitan right now, and in the Western Mountains and several different towns in the east near Brega. And people, of course, in cities across Libya are experiencing a whole range of things right now, particularly in Tripoli.
And tell us about Misrata, because I take it that you were pretty much there on the scene when the photojournalist Tim Hetherington was killed, and I remember speaking with him at the time that his wonderful, well, not wonderful, but powerful film, I would say, Restrepo was released. Give us a sense of what happened there, if you can.
Yeah, well, that was just a tragedy. I mean, Tim Hetherington and Chris Hondros, losing both of them in one day. Misrata was under siege. The main street in town, Tripoli Street, was a very hot front line with rebel forces battling at very close quarters with government forces. And they happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And they were killed along with two other journalists who were wounded. And then, you know, we, along with others, worked to get them evacuated and to get the bodies repatriated. So it was just a very, very sad time. I mean, the siege of Misrata was very, very hot then. And now the situation is not great, but it's much improved. We're hearing about grad attacks on the town that have been hurting civilians again, but it's from a greater distance now. Before, the troops were inside the town with tanks, with their fighters, and it was a very different scene. And there were a lot of casualties, and many, many Libyans lost their lives, and many were wounded. And we also lost Tim and Chris as part of that.
And Sydney Quirum, having been in Libya for some time, you probably missed the president's recent press conference, but of course he was asked a lot about Libya and the War Powers Act, and he made the essential argument that it's a humanitarian mission, and had they not intervened, that the worst killer since bin Laden would have murdered his own people. I mean, when you say grads, military equipment and rockets are used on civilians, it sounds like that Gaddafi really is has total disregard for his people, or at least some of his people.
Well, what we've seen across the country, in the east, in Misrata, and in the western mountains, are indiscriminate attacks on civilian areas and use of banned weapons like landmines, anti-personnel landmines. We've seen across the board grad attacks, and they're inherently an indiscriminate weapon. They don't have any guidance system on them. And particularly in Misrata, really high levels of civilian casualties. So this really is, attacks on the people of Libya. They're not by any means the only people who are affected by what's going on, but it's hard to know from this distance what kind of orders are being given. But what we're seeing on the ground is are really effects on the civilians and on the Libyan people.
And recently, Sidney Quirin, I've spoken with the current U.S. ambassador at large for war crimes issues and a former ambassador who had the same job, who negotiated the U.S., helped form the International Criminal Court, who have just issued an arrest warrant for Muammar Gaddafi. Now, I understand that this could be a paradoxical situation here, that in as much as it looks like NATO in targeting command and control may well be trying to eliminate Gaddafi, but I would think that if there's an international arrest warrant out, then they would have to honor that and not act like this is the Wild West.
Yeah, well, I can't speak directly to what NATO's doing right now, but we certainly think that issuing arrest warrants for Muammar Gaddafi and Saif al-Islam, his son, and the intelligence chief, Abdullah Senussi, really signals that the law can reach even those who are thought to be immune to accountability. So this is a step towards ending the impunity that's been going on for a while now. But that paradox with NATO is something that I really am not prepared to speak to.
Well, given that you work on human rights, can you give us a sense of that landscape with all the refugees, and not just in the East, but also in the West, where you've been?
Well, as you know, Libya has been home to many, many migrant workers from Africa, stemming originally from Gaddafi's Pan-Africa policy, where he was at some level welcoming them in, but at the same time, especially in more recent years, making it quite a difficult environment for them and putting them into detention facilities and in fairly rough conditions. And since the beginning of the conflict, as the protesters were starting to rise up against the Gaddafi's government, the ones who got caught in the crossfire were really the migrant workers. And they were the ones to leave the country in fairly large numbers from the early days. Many of them left without very much, and even so got robbed by both sides at checkpoints as they were trying to leave the country, and described situations of some violence towards them, and just generally not an easy journey. Some have been trying to leave by sea to Europe, particularly those who are in Tripoli in the west right now, and some are ending up in the refugee camp in Shusha, which is on the border with Tunisia. And that, too, has not been a particularly safe place for people. At least 6 people have died since May there under questionable circumstances. And at the same time, about 1,500 people are missing or presumed to be dead in the Mediterranean from boats capsizing and sinking. So it's been a very difficult path for the migrants, particularly from sub-Saharan Africa, but not only from sub-Saharan Africa. And in part, this has stemmed from the presumption, I think, by many in Libya, the allegation that the Gaddafi government has been recruiting mercenaries from sub-Saharan Africa, which has really polarized their situation in the country. So it's been a very difficult scene for them.
I take it that one of the reasons that they're targeted is that they are Africans, and that Gaddafi's been using African mercenaries, and so the rebels therefore assume that these workers are fighters, Gaddafi's fighters. Is that right?
Well, there's certainly those allegations there, and it's very hard to get to the bottom of all this, but it's widely presumed to be the case. Many of the people that I've talked to who are presumed to be mercenaries claim to be migrant workers who've been in the country for many years. So it's very hard to parse the stories. But that's certainly what is driving, I think, some of the antipathy towards this very vulnerable group of people. And many people who have tried to leave the country, even though they themselves are not presumed to be mercenaries, sort of get caught up in the anger that many of the Libyans have felt towards what has happened to them because of the Gaddafi government. So it's been a pretty fraught situation. The authorities in the rebel controlled area have apologized for some of the violence in the early days, and every story has got multiple sides to it. And what we've seen also are, many Libyan employers trying to shepherd their employees to safety, the ones who are not Libyans, to make sure that they don't get targeted and that they're, known to be people who've worked in Libya for a while. There have been, charitable organizations that have sprung up in rebel-controlled areas to tend to their needs, and various international organizations like International Organization for Migration have done very significant work to get many of the migrants evacuated from places like Misrata, where over 6,000 of them were stranded at the port while the city was under siege. So there have been positive stories here, but it has definitely been a difficult time for the migrant workers of Libya.
So the premise for the U.S. Intervention, which of course followed a U.N. resolution and an Arab League call as well, is premised on the idea that Gaddafi would have slaughtered all those people in Benghazi, as he'd referred to them as rats. Is that your understanding as a human rights monitor that those people definitely their lives were in jeopardy?
Well, it's hard to say anything definite about the future.
Sure.
But we do know that, in things that have happened in the past, and the Bouslim prison, for example, one of the more notorious prisons in Libya, where many regime opponents right now are being held, we know about the deliberate killing of about 1,200 prisoners in 1996. So that's one data point. We also know about various other executions over the years, and a very deep climate of fear. We also saw the tanks that were and rocket launchers and other weapon systems that were on their way to Benghazi when various NATO countries struck them. And so it's very hard to say exactly what would have happened. But it's clear that Benghazi has been sort of singled out as one of the most rebellious cities, and the Gaddafi government, when we talk to people who've been in detention, say that people from certain cities are really singled out for the worst treatment, and Benghazi is one of those cities. And the things that we're seeing of people in custody, pretty gruesome testimonies we're hearing of how they're treated. So as much as it's hard to predict the future, we know what's happened in the past, and we know that this raised the stakes in ways that was never true in the 1990s. So it's anybody's guess what would have happened, but we know that this government has not shied away from using lethal force when its authority and power is being threatened.
Again, I'm speaking with Sydney Crum, who is a consultant with Human Rights Watch, and she's been in Libya for some time, both in Misrata and on the western border area, where there is a refugee crisis, along with, I believe, quite a bit of fighting. So conversely then, what's your understanding of what holds this regime together, and what kind of support does it have? We see examples of what seem like staged pro-Qaddafi rallies in Benghazi, but this apparently is a civil war, and maybe it's being prolonged by Qaddafi's money and his mercenaries, but there does seem to be some support for him.
Yeah, the pro-Qaddafi rallies in Tripoli, you mean?
Yes.
I think what we're seeing is a country that has been under the grip of a single man's vision for it for over 40 years. And, you know, there has been a large class of people who haven't had much opportunity for education. And there have been, and the money clearly is, the money is certainly said to be a part of what has won his support in certain pockets. There are certain towns in particular where he has curried favor. And I can't claim to get to the bottom of it, but there does seem to be a bit of a divide between people who have access to external information and people who are don't know much more than what they see on state TV. And certainly there's been a lot of propaganda put out there by Libyan state TV, and not everyone has access to alternate narratives. And certainly there are then the allegations of money and of buying favor with, you know, homes and opportunities and jobs and all of that. So, and as you say, the allegation is certainly out there about mercenaries. But a lot of this is just hard to penetrate because the rumors fly fast and thick in Libya, and nailing them down requires an immense amount of work to really get to the bottom of a lot of this.
Well, just in closing, Sydney Crum, what's your sense of how and when this will end?
Well, predicting the future again is going to be difficult, but the rebel forces are operating in the western mountains right now, trying to press down towards Tripoli, and Qaddafi forces are trying to hold them off there. Again, there's rebel forces in control of most of Misrata, and then the Qaddafi forces flanking them on either side, and then, you know, in the east, in Brega, and then you've got the NATO strikes. And then the big question mark in everyone's mind is whether the people, if and when the people of Tripoli will really decisively rise up. And they've tried to do that many times, but clearly as sort of the center of the Qaddafi government, the force to put that area down is much more extreme than it has been in some of the other parts of the country. So it's been a difficult road for them. But I think the pivot point will be in Tripoli to see what the people there do. And I think that's where we're going to see the decisive action.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Sydney Crum.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Sydney Crum, who's a consultant with Human Rights Watch and has been involved with human rights work and political analysis in conflict zones for 10 years in Kosovo, Iraq, Mozambique, Pakistan, and Libya. Prior to that, she worked on Pakistan for the State Department, including in Peshawar on the border with Afghanistan. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with a former Libyan diplomat who was a translator for Muammar Gaddafi.